Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, June 1st. Bell family donates 100 acres to city for sports complex. Donations will allow for bigger complex than originally thought, by Kim Smith. The Bell family, which has been in Odessa for five generations, is donating up to 100 acres of land for the city of Odessa's future sports complex, a contribution city officials called a big step forward Tuesday. The donated land, which is worth an estimated $5 million, is located in the Parks Bell Ranch area, said Mayor Javier Hoven. The Bell family's generosity will also make it possible for the city to expand the facility that was proposed in April, said City Council Member Mark Mata. Originally, the city envisioned a $14.5 million, 70,000-square-foot facility with six basketball courts and 12 volleyball courts for an extra $10 million. They could have added four 300-foot baseball-softball fields. Now they hope to build a 75,000 to 100,000-square-foot indoor facility with 20 volleyball courts, 10 basketball courts, and a 200-meter banked competition track. Outside, they intend to build 8 to 12 multi-purpose fields for soccer, football, and lacrosse, and up to 8 baseball-softball fields, Mata said. The new facility, which will have room to expand, is expected to cost $50 million. The city could break ground by the end of August, and the facility could be completed within 18 months from that time, Mata said. Hoven and Mata said the city has only been able to get to this point because of teamwork. Mata and council member Denise Swanner and their Quality of Life Committee has been working on the project, along with council member Steve Thompson and others. They said the city is hopeful it will be able to build and maintain the facility through public-private partnerships. We're reaching out to different companies, different corporations for sponsorship. The one thing about this sports complex is that we're trying to make this as affordable and easy to fund as possible. So we're really reaching out to these big corporations here in Odessa and the surrounding areas, Mata said. We reached out to some oil companies. We reached out to some local company owners. We want this to be sponsored. We're going out and looking for naming rights. We're going to go out there to get help with the maintenance fees, to help with the cost of running the daily functions of this sports complex. We're thinking outside the box so we can be able to bring this and not have to have the citizens of Odessa foot the bill. Thompson said at least three people are interested in having naming rights already, and Swanner said sponsorship packets are ready and available. Mata said the city is also looking into setting up a nonprofit organization so it can accept donations. The facility is long overdue, and the city is looking forward to the extra motel-hotel tax it will bring into the community, Swanner said. Under the original plan, the city anticipated making $1.3 million a year by year five, but Thompson said he thinks the city could start making money day one under the new plan, thanks to all of the tournaments that will now be possible. The Odessa City Council agreed to hire Synergy Global for $15,000 on February 14th to conduct a sports complex feasibility study. More than 3,100 residents participated in a 10-question online survey gauged to determine their top priorities, and several more residents attended two community meetings on the facility. The vast majority of participants wanted the facility in either District 2 or District 4. They also listed basketball and volleyball courts at the top of their wish list followed by indoor turf, baseball fields, and indoor batting cages. In April, Synergy discussed four potential sites for the complex: the Bells Park land, city-owned land near the Ector County Jail, private land at I-20 and Loop 338, and private land behind Home Depot, known as the McKnight Family Ranch. The company also gave the city a variety of options in terms of amenities, with the most expensive being $41.5 million. The prices vary upon the number of indoor courts, whether the city included a 200-meter track and ice rinks, and whether the city included outdoor fields. The exact details about who will be running the facility and how much that will cost have yet to be worked out, Mata said. I think it's going to probably be a partnership. Synergy Global will probably have the bulk of it, maintaining it, managing the daily operations, the maintenance of it. The city is going to also partake in that, in some form or fashion, but that's going to be worked out in the details later on. Right now, it does seem like a Synergy or some other third-party management is going to come in and do the bulk of it, Mata said. The only thing the Bell family asked in return was for a 5-acre park to be included in the project that will be dedicated to Amy Doris Bell, who died at the age of 33 in May 2014. According to her obituary, Amy Bell established the Amy Doris Bell Donor Fund at the Permian Basin Area Foundation and supported numerous agencies who provide health and wellness for children throughout the United States and the world. Younger siblings will now have a place to play while their brothers and sisters compete, Mata said. According to city officials, the Bell family has routinely provided green spaces, parks, playgrounds, and schools over the last 60 years. In addition, they've cooperated with Grow Odessa and the City of Odessa on multiple industrial developments, including Mission Dorado, Parks Legado, and Parks Bell Ranch North. The Bell family is ready and willing to be partners with the City of Odessa and other significant corporate groups to make the dream of a high-quality sports complex a reality for all Odessans. Larry Bell said in a news release, "We know firsthand that quality of life is such an important part of making Odessa a special place to live, work, and play. We continually work to make that part of all of our projects." Mata said the new complex will not include ice rinks, but he has spoken with people about the desire to have a place for kids to play hockey and figure skate. "We're going to work together to try to get something done for them. Now they've submitted some plans to me about an ice rink. So we know the city has some land that we own. So we're going to look into that, see what we can do about it. So maybe we can offer them some land that they can use for that, and hopefully I can get that going," he said. Full slate of fun. OC summer camps kick off in June. Running the gamut from sports and journaling to scrapbooking and zombie preparedness, Odessa College's summer camps are set to kick off June 5th and be offered through August 4th. Director of Community Recreation, Christine Williams, said they will have the regular sports activities like tennis, archery, golf, volleyball, and soccer. They will also have camps at the Fab Lab, virtual reality, nuts, bolts, and thingamajigs, and bullet journaling. Scrapbooking is a new camp suggested by the kids, and there will be a chess 101 camp starting with the beginner levels. And if the campers like it, they will add on advanced levels. This will be for ages 8 to 12 years old, Williams said. Astronomy 101 and the Science of Astronomy will be available. Astronomy 101 is geared toward the younger kids, and the Science of Astronomy is going to be aimed at the older ones, so the students will learn more about the science of it. Snack Attack is back finally. I'm super pumped about this one. We are collaborating with Culinary Arts again. We haven't had this camp since pre-pandemic, so I'm really excited that this one is back on. And we're also adding a dessert decorating camp with culinary arts as well. We'll have multiple camps over there, Williams said. The snack attack and the dessert camp will be held in the culinary arts area at OC. So the students will work with professional equipment and chefs. I've been wanting to do a dessert decorating camp, teaching kids how to decorate cupcakes and cakes and learning the difference between a buttercream and a royal icing, Williams said. Overall, she added, there are 17 different types of camps with multiple times that they will be held. Williams said they will have 3 different archery camps, 5 tennis camps, and 4 sessions of Camp Runamuckus, an all-sports camp. They can choose to do a morning session, an afternoon session, or both for Camp Runamuckus. During Camp Runamuckus, campers will stay active all day, learning a variety of sports, going to field trips, and learning laser tag. Every day ends with a swim in the indoor pool. The teachers and staff are mainly Ector County ISD staff. Because there are more camps, Williams had to hire more staff than ever before. Because she wants to make sure that there are enough eyes on them and the campers stay safe as possible. All the staff goes through multiple trainings, certification, and background checks. The training includes such as CPR and child abuse recognition from Harmony Home and general training reviewing the programs, where all the equipment is, making sure they are ready to go, Williams said. This is the most camps that we've ever hosted. I think it's going to be fun. We're just trying to get all of our last-minute details squared away, Williams said. The age range for the camp is 5 years old through high school, but 5-year-olds can join the tennis camps. For the other camps, the youngest children are 6. Camp Runamuckus is for 6 to 12-year-olds. Archery is for 9 to 12-year-olds. And Fab Lab camps are for middle to high school students. We're trying to have a bigger range of camps for all K through 12. I'm actually pretty happy with our lineup this summer. I'm excited, William said. It's a lot of fun when the kids get to campus, as they get to run from one camp to camp and see what they're doing. I want the kids to have fun with us this summer. I want them to stay engaged, meet new friends. They don't always get to meet kids from outside their school, so it's just a great time to come have fun and learn something new. Hopefully we have 800 kids. That's going to be amazing, Williams said. Planning the camps takes a long time. She started asking people if they'll come back after summer is over. After the first of the year, she started putting a calendar together, seeing when people have vacations and when facilities are open and other items. We start ordering equipment early just to make sure it's all here in time, Williams said. Launchpad Director, Attracting Entrepreneurs, by Ruth Campbell. Although she has a background in education and teaching, Dana Church has hit the ground running as campus director of Blackstone Launchpad at University of Texas Permian Basin. Church has been on the job since November 2021, which was when things were starting to open back up after COVID. We still had a lot of online programming versus on campus. It was right at that time where we were trying to get more students to come back, Church said. The Blackstone Launchpad Network makes entrepreneurship and entrepreneurial skills accessible and relevant for all college students to help them build thriving companies and careers, the program brochure said. Blackstone Launchpad is an entrepreneurial program that came from the Blackstone Charitable Foundation. They put together this program where they could put it out to university and college campuses to help start entrepreneurial skills with university students before they have graduated. Currently, it's at 50 different universities across the United States to start promoting entrepreneurship and entrepreneurial skills, Church said. The program is open to anyone on campus, any student, any major, anyone who has an idea or thought about becoming an entrepreneur one day. We're here to answer those questions, provide resources, and help those students out, she said. Brian Shedd, Executive Director of the Office of Innovation and Commercialization at UTPB said, "Church has hit the ground running. Her efforts have already increased student participation in the entrepreneurship programs at UTPB. She has also been very involved with the launch of student-made UTPB, studentmadeutpb.com, and the renovations at the Dunnigan Library to relocate the Roden Center for Entrepreneurship and establish the library as the new home for student entrepreneurship at UTPB," Shedd said. "Her background in education has made her a natural fit for her role here, and she is doing a wonderful job to provide students with entrepreneurial pathways to explore," he added. Church has a mailing list that reaches 375 students right now. "However, I spend a lot of time going into classrooms, doing short class talks, or going to events just to get the word out that we exist. That's the biggest challenge, is getting the word out that Blackstone Launchpad is here and that we have these resources available for students, regardless of major, so that they can take part, because if they don't know we're here, they can't participate. The participation varies depending on the event or the workshop or whatever we're doing at that particular time, if it meets their interest or their questions at the time," Church said. When she first heard about Blackstone Launchpad, she said she wished something like this existed when she was a student. "Not only does it provide skills for people who are interested in being entrepreneurs, but the entrepreneurial mindset is very important as a job skill in general. With this in mind, I think this is highly important for students to have access to these free opportunities and free connections. Like I said, we're on 50 campuses, so it opens up the door for them to be able to have resources, mentors, and opportunities all across the country that they wouldn't have if we weren't here. So I feel that it is very important and it's highly beneficial for students," Church said. Online workshops are available, and they also have taken trips that allow students to network with people, especially in Texas, with other UT campuses. "It's not just open to UT campuses, but they work well with other UT campuses, and they collaborate often. We've kind of got our little mini UT network as well for entrepreneurship so that we can bounce off ideas and help students out," Church said. "They work with the Small Business Development Center on campus, but it's like the next step after Blackstone Launchpad. We are working more toward helping the students that still are going through the processes. However, if they are already up and running with a business, they're more than welcome to go to SBDC, and I have sent people to SBDC before, but I almost feel like we're kind of a channel to get them started and get them on the right path. And then when they get to that specific point, then they can go to the SBDC and continue to get help and to continue to get the resources they need, especially after they've graduated. Our program is typically for current students or recent alums. So once they get past the 6 month, a year mark of graduating, then unfortunately, they really need to move on to some other sources like SBDC," Church said. Her office is currently in the College of Business, but it is moving to the library where more people will be exposed to it. Her new office will be next to the new Roden Center in the library near the new Makerspace area. It's going to open up the doors for people to be like, "Oh, I want to learn more about that. I want to see what's going on in there. What are they doing?" They can also take those ideas, if it's an actual product, and go make a prototype in the makerspace. Now it's all tied in and connected in, and this is the perfect space for us to be able to reach more students," Church said. She added that it's been wonderful to be back at UTPB and part of the progress of the university. "There are some really good people on this campus that have been a really good resource to go to as I've gone through this journey," Church said. Quick hits. Third annual Smoke Something Barbecue Cook-Off. Smoke Something will present the third annual barbecue cook-off at 9 a.m. June 3rd at Woodson Park, 1020 East Murphy Street. The best Brisket will win $500. Entry is $75. For more information or to enter, call 432-530-9961. Rods for God Car Show, Second Baptist Odessa, 711 East 17th Street, has scheduled a Rods for God Car Show from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. June 3rd. The People's Choice Car will be voted on with non-perishable food items. For more information, call tinyurl.com/YF2FJFTA. Vintage Deluxe Trade Days. Vintage Deluxe, 500 East 8th Street, has scheduled a trade day from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. June 10th. For more information, visit tinyurl.com/2UNJTJWF. Hot Dog Run. The Midland Humane Coalition has scheduled a hot dog run at 7 a.m. June 10th at Midland College, 3600 North Garfield Street. Dogs and their humans are invited to run a 5K or 1 mile race. Tickets start at $25. For more information or to purchase tickets, visit tinyurl.com/4MFVAJ9V. West Texas Blowout. West Texas Blowout will take place July 15th at the Midland County Horseshoe Arena, 2514 Arena Trail, Midland. Artists scheduled to perform: Joe Lopez, Y Grupo Maz, Solido, La Sombra, David Farias Band, Asalto, and more. Tickets are $20 general admission or $30 VIP floor. Ticket outlets: Josie's Grill and Super Mercado in Midland. For tickets or more information, call 432-682-1300 or 866-471-7463 or visit westtexasblowout.com. Rivers of Nihil, the Ector Theater, 500 North Texas Avenue, will present Rivers of Nihil with special guest Astringency, Nightmare Canvas, Day After Dead, and Follow the Awakened from 7 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. July 19th. Tickets are $20. For more information or to purchase tickets, visit tinyurl.com/r7dkpt4c. UTPB names new vice president of advancement. The University of Texas Permian Basin has named Sandy Bliss the new vice president of advancement. A Tuesday press release detailed Bliss will begin her leadership role on June 19th. Bliss has more than 18 years of fundraising experience, most recently with the Virginia Tech Corps of Cadets as the chief advancement officer. In this role, she led the Corps advancement team made up of development, alumni relations, scholarships, stewardship, and communications. Bliss led her team to reach the campaign goal 5 years ahead of schedule. Prior to that, she was the senior development officer for Central Initiatives and scholarships for the University of Miami office of the provost. Her work there as the lead fundraiser included building the plans and donor pipeline for a $500 million campaign for new student housing. We are thrilled to welcome Sandy to the Falcon family. She brings years of experience in leading and executing strategic advancement efforts at the university level. Sandy will oversee all operations of the advancement office, including alumni relations, said UTPB President Dr. Sandra Woodley in the release. As the university begins our 50th birthday celebration, Sandy will play a vital role in garnering financial support for campus transformation, Mesa building renovation, academic programs, and UTPB's athletic master plan. I am honored to be joining UTPB. There is so much potential here, and I want to be a part of it. I was impressed by the community involvement, which is critical for the success of a university like UTPB. There are several exciting things happening at UTPB, but I have to say the newly renovated Seed Building is a crown jewel for the area. What a special and important place for donors to invest, Bliss said in the press release. Bliss is no stranger to the West Texas community. She spent many years working with donors in Midland and Odessa in previous roles. Bliss said she's ready to hit the ground running to help the university meet its philanthropic goals. President Woodley has a strong vision for UTPB, and I was immediately drawn in by her energy and excitement. I cannot wait to partner with her and other faculty and staff to achieve the goals of the university, added Bliss. Bliss has a bachelor's degree in psychology and a master's degree in family science from Oklahoma State University. West Texas Jazz Party returns this week. This week, the longest jazz party returns for its 57th edition, put on by the West Texas Jazz Society. The West Texas Jazz Party will take place from June 2nd and 3rd at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. The West Texas Jazz Party will feature three concerts this week, all taking place in the Devonian Ballroom, beginning with an evening show from 7 to 11 p.m. June 2nd, a brunch concert from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. June 3rd, and then an evening concert from 7 to 11 p.m. later that day. Jazz artists from all over the world will be coming by to perform at the two-day party. We always get very excited for this event, West Texas Jazz Society President Eric Baker said. It's our flagship event. It's what really put the Jazz Society on the map all those years ago. Effectively, what got it all started is that some people love jazz, decided to get together and bring in some musicians and host a party. Over time, that party has continued, and generations have come and gone through West Texas, but the jazz party remains. We're now on our year 57. We have our eyes firmly on the 60th anniversary coming up in a few years. This year's artists include Johnny Vero, John Eric Kelso, Harry Allen, William and Peter Anderson, Dan Barrett, Daniela Soledad, Nate Najar, Rebecca Kilgore, Frank Tate, Richard Simon, Chuck Redd, Ricky Malachi, Brian Piper, Roasano Spartiello, and more. Varo is a pianist who's also the longest-standing member and has attended the most jazz parties. Johnny got his start many years ago playing with some of the best jazz musicians around New York, Baker said. His piano style is well-versed in that great American songbook. He can play just about any song that you can throw at him. He's also our music director, so he puts together all of the sets. He'll decide who gets to play with who at each time slot. William and Peter Anderson both also hail from New York, playing the saxophone and clarinet respectively. They're just two of the most known and up-and-coming musicians we have, Baker said. They're such huge fan favorites. We have a married couple returning and a guitarist named Nate Najar and vocalist Daniela Soledad. Daniela comes from Brazil. There are a couple of nice sets of bossa nova jazz. While some people may not know the difference between a jazz festival and a jazz party, Baker talked about the differences between the two. A jazz party is a little bit different from a jazz festival in one major way, Baker said. A jazz festival is usually held across multiple venues, and it includes various established bands or groups. But a jazz party is where we'll bring in a group of 20 musicians and we'll put them in a group of 5 or 6 people at a time. While these musicians may have played with one another over the course of their careers, they're not usually in established touring groups, so they get together once a year here in Odessa, and we'll decide the songs that they play just a few minutes before they walk out on stage. The musicians also don't use any sheet music, according to Baker. They improvise all the music together, right there on the spot, Baker said. It's a magical experience, hearing musicians creating music that will never be performed that way again in front of our eyes. Each group will go up and perform for about 25, say 30 minutes, and then a whole other group of musicians will rotate in. We have multiple drummers, multiple bass players, multiple piano players. They all come in and perform in different groups over the course of the weekend. The main jazz styles that are featured at the jazz party are swing and bossa nova. These jazz parties are one of the last bastions of the great American songbook, and keeping that specific style alive and in the eyes and ears and hearts of listeners across the country, Baker said. The jazz party does specialize in the great American songbook, or swing jazz. Originally, the West Texas Jazz Party was held at Lincoln Tower back when it was still a hotel. Over the years, the West Texas Jazz Party changed locations between Odessa and Midland before returning downtown Odessa at the Marriott. Baker talked about how special it is to have the jazz party take place just a few blocks from where it all began. It's special for me that the jazz party is back home in downtown Odessa, Baker said. Over the years, it switched back from Midland and Odessa. In the 90s, we became the West Texas Jazz Society, bringing together the Odessa and Midland Society into one. For many years, it would go back and forth between cities. But with the addition of the Marriott Hotel, we now have a space close to home, just a few blocks from where it started. And I think that's special for the city of Odessa. I think it helps maintain the standard of being a music-friendly community. I think it's important for Odessa to be well-known for the arts and entertainment. If you go, what? The West Texas Jazz Party. When? June 2nd and 3rd. Where? The Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. Devonian Ballroom. Where to purchase tickets? tinyurl.com/3nd6nswb. Obituary for June 1st. Darla Ann Fuller Nixon. Our beloved mother, Darla Ann Fuller Nixon, 72, of Odessa, passed away peacefully on May 25th. Darla is preceded in death by her parents, C.D. Fuller and Josephine and Kenneth Burns, sister, Linda Ferguson, and brother-in-law, Chuck Smeltzer. She is survived by her brother, Charles Fuller, and wife, Diana, sisters, Paula Smeltzer and Donna Franks, daughter Pam Nixon, and son Joey Nixon and wife Nikki. She also leaves behind many nephews and nieces, whom she loved very much. In honor of Darla's memory, we are holding a celebration of her life to be arranged at a later date. Woman accused of committing more than 24 thefts. By Kim Smith, a convicted felon with 10 pending cases was arrested Thursday in connection with 21 felony theft cases. According to police and court documents, Sandra D. Allen, also goes by Sandra D. Hudson, 55, is accused of stealing thousands of dollars worth of items from a handful of stores since last fall. Texas Department of Public Safety records show Allen, 55, has been arrested numerous times on theft, burglary, trespassing, stolen car and assault charges, and served multiple stints in prison. According to Ector County District Court records, Allen was charged with criminally trespassing at the Music City Mall in November 2021 and February 2022. She was released from the Ector County Jail each time after posting a $500 surety bond. Allen was arrested and later indicted for burglarizing a Quick Track store March 2022, and was released from the Ector County Jail after posting $14,000 in surety bonds. 6 months later, she was indicted for allegedly stealing clothes and bath sheets from Walmart, court documents show. 2 months after that, in January 2023, Allen was indicted for allegedly stealing plants, cigarettes, and cleaning supplies over the course of 4 days from an HEB, DK, and Kent Quick. Warrants were issued after those indictments, but were never served, and on May 8th, Allen was indicted in 10 separate cases alleging she stole food, purses, cosmetics, electronics, and tools from HEB, Easy Pawn, and Home Depot on 10 separate dates from November 19th through April 2nd. On May 17th and May 19th, Odessa police also were asked for arrest warrants to be issued for Allen in 5 other theft cases. According to OPD records, officers believe Allen walked into Best Buy on January 3rd, January 5th, January 6th, and January 7th, and walked out with shopping carts filled with items totaling $4,735.69, $1,195.97, $1,358.07, and $699.98, respectively. They also allege she walked out of the Lowe's Home Improvement store on April 6th with $998 worth of items. On Thursday, Allen was arrested on failure to appear warrants in the Music City Mall and the Quick Track burglary cases. The warrants issued follow the November 28th, January 23rd, and May 8th indictments, and the 5 arrest warrants issued May 17th and May 19th. Ector County jail records show Allen remained in custody on surety bonds totaling $341,500. Ector County District Attorney Dusty Gallivan said it is his policy not to speak on specific cases. However, generally speaking, Gallivan said it is unusual for one defendant to have multiple pending cases and multiple outstanding warrants. Again, speaking generally, Gallivan said, theft cases are often connected to drugs and alcohol, so either they were drunk when they did something, or they were trying to get money to get their high on, Gallivan said. Local news roundup, Odessan arrested on aggravated assault charge. A 34-year-old Odessa man was arrested early Tuesday morning after his wife told officers he assaulted her and fired a gun while standing over her. According to an Odessa Police Department report, officers received a disturbance call from the 7200 block of Bellini Street around 1:20 a.m. Tuesday. When the officers arrived, a 34-year-old woman told them she got into an argument with her husband, Christopher Smith, while driving, and when they arrived home, he grabbed her by the throat and pushed her into one of their trucks, causing her to fall, the report stated. The woman told officers Smith went into the house, retrieved a gun, and while standing over her, fired approximately 3 times in an unknown direction, the report stated. According to the report, officers found a 40-millimeter Glock on the couple's entertainment center in the house and 2 spent casings in the bed of a Ford F-150. Smith was arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a second-degree felony punishable by 2 to 20 years in prison. He remains in the Ector County Jail Tuesday evening. No bond has been set yet. Detectives seize 130 grams of cocaine, making 3 arrests. Odessa police detectives seized more than 130 grams of cocaine and made 3 felony drug arrests last week. According to an Odessa Police Department report, detectives with OPD's intelligence unit, along with investigators from the Texas Department of Public Safety, contacted Jorge Loera, Raul Palma, and Carlos Hernandez Palma May 24th as they were sitting inside a Lincoln Continental in a Tres Hermanas Boulevard parking lot. The canine officer alerted on the vehicle, and detectives found 130 grams of cocaine in the driver's side door compartment, the report stated. They also found 1.6 grams of cocaine on Raul Palma and 0.9 grams of the drug on Hernandez Palma. Loera, who was the driver of the car, was arrested on suspicion of manufacturing delivery of a controlled substance, a first-degree felony punishable by 5 years of prison. Raul Palma was arrested on the suspicion of possession of a controlled substance, and Hernandez Palma was arrested on suspicion of possession of a controlled substance and a federal supervised release warrant out of New Mexico. Loera is being held at the Ector County Jail on a U.S. Marshal's hold and a $75,000 surety bond. Raul Palma was released after posting a $20,000 surety bond, and Hernandez Palma is being held on the New Mexico warrant and surety bonds totaling $7,000. DPS, victim in Friday crash was passenger, not driver. The Texas Department of Public Safety announced Tuesday that a 51-year-old Odessa man who died early Friday morning in a one-vehicle crash was actually the passenger, not the driver, as originally reported. According to DPS, Mario Lopez Valdez, 30, of Odessa, was traveling south on Loop 338 when his Chevy Impala veered off the west side of the highway 2.5 miles south of Odessa and hit a fence. Luis Carlos Lujan Gameros was pronounced dead at the scene of the crash, which took place shortly before 1 a.m. Lopez Valdez was treated at Medical Center Hospital and released. Upon follow-up investigation at Medical Center Hospital, it was determined Lopez Valdez Mario was the driver of Vehicle 1, DPS said Tuesday. ECISD is trying to make Narcan widely available. The opioid overdose treatment Narcan is now available across Ector County ISD campuses, and there are more than 100 people trained now. Those who have been trained are nurses, administrators, first responders, and other certain staff. They have used Narcan twice since it was implemented. We have trained all of the nursing and health services staff and are slowly adding first responders and those who would like to be trained. Also, our police officers have already been trained. We have used Narcan twice since the implementation, Health Services Director Rebecca Rhodes said in an email. ECISD Police Chief Jeff Daniels said they have seen more overdoses in the public than on campuses. He added that having it throughout the district is a huge benefit to students and staff to have it there. We have a society that has fentanyl in it, and so we need to be prepared in case we have some across those emergencies to be able to help those who are in need, Daniel said. He added that the fentanyl that's really dangerous to students is what's coming across the border because it's made by the cartels. It's unregulated and not produced in a legitimate lab. Most likely it's made in Mexico, but it could be other locations overseas. In a shipment of 1,000 pills, 999 may be okay, but there could be just one pill that has too much in it. He said they see it in pill form. Unfortunately, we see it in our society, and fentanyl poisoning, it's really a one-way street if you get it. There's not much help unless you have Narcan on site to save you, Daniel said. He added that his officers have carried Narcan for 3 to 4 years. From what he has seen, everyone is on board with being trained to use it. It's just one of those tools that you can give them to better equip them to protect our kids. And I think everybody was on board for that and excited to get more of it. There's only so many of us out there, and there are so many schools, but this now puts it on every campus, Daniel said. He added that a lot of agencies have gotten away from testing narcotics in the field because it can be toxic if you handle it with your bare hands. Daniel said there is field testing for marijuana, cocaine, and methamphetamines, depending on what it looks like. They may not test it because it could be fentanyl. We'll file the charge, send it to the court, and let them send it to the lab to be tested. It's a process, Daniel said. It's a very dangerous drug. Rhodes said there are times when Narcan is harder to get, like at the beginning of the school year and last summer. The antidote was obtained through a grant from More Narcan Please. She only was able to get 48 boxes initially, but she was also able to get it from Premia Care. I can only get so many at a time, but I can get it from several different places, Rhodes said. There are 2 doses in a box. It is administered through the nose. It's super easy, Rhodes said. She added that people bought into the importance of having Narcan available. It is also in most nurses' emergency to-go bags. Although there haven't been a lot of occasions to use Narcan on campuses, Rhodes said there always is that risk. A student could take something in the morning and it could take effect a couple hours later. It's not always an immediate effect, so sometimes it can take a little while, she added. Anybody who takes an opioid, whether it's prescribed or illicit, can have an overdose, Rhodes said. So it's available for everyone, she added. Rhodes noted that it's important that the district has taken this step. It could save someone's life. It's a risk-benefit scenario. I think it's super important because the benefit way outweighs the risk of not having it, she added. I have some discussions with some of the nurses about doing that with our seniors, just giving them a quick rundown of how to get it, especially now that it's becoming more available because the FDA approved it to be over-the-counter, Rhodes said. Dear Dr. Roach, I will be undergoing a thyroidectomy. To reduce the chances of thyroid cancer, given my family history, a CHEK2 mutation, and ongoing thyroid nodule growth, my concern is that I have an ECG for pre-op purposes and receive results that stated I had low voltage on the extremity leads. Otherwise, I have normal results. I have a BMI of 30, very low blood pressure, and high to average cholesterol. In addition, I have been taking anastrozole for ER-positive breast cancer since 2017. How concerning is the ECG result, given the other pieces at play? I have read that anastrozole can impact the heart. I have been cancer-free for 5 years, but my oncologist wants me to continue the medication for 10 years because of the CHEK2 mutation, GC. Answer, abnormalities on electrocardiograms are very common, and although they can provoke anxiety, they often do not represent anything seriously wrong with the heart. Low voltage on the extremity leads on an ECG can sometimes occur when there is a large amount of fluid in the sac surrounding the heart, called a pericardial effusion. It can also indicate infiltration of the heart muscle by abnormal protein called cardiac amyloidosis. As worrisome as it sounds, neither of them is likely, and the vast majority of people who get this abnormality on a routine ECG have nothing identifiably wrong. Even after an exhaustive search, I have seen this finding in my own patients numerous times and never had a person with any serious problems. But if a person is sick enough to be in the hospital and has this, that would be much more concerning. Anastrozole can cause heart problems, but these are usually related to the blood vessels of the heart, not the heart muscle or the pericardium. It is unlikely that the anastrozole has anything to do with the low voltage. People who are very overweight, not you with your BMI of 30, and people with a severely low thyroid level, I'm sure your doctor is making sure that is not the case, can have low voltage. But I suspect that you are one of the many people who have nothing particularly wrong and has this as an incidental finding. Miri urges special session for funding. With the legislative session ending without a funding resolution, Ector County ISD Superintendent Scott Miri wants Governor Greg Abbott to put it on a special session agenda. Miri said the district is very appreciative of the House and Senate members that exhibited strong support for the 5.5 million children that are served across the state of Texas and the 33,500 students served by ECISD. However, ECISD and other districts and the children they serve did not receive the type of investments they deserve. We hope over the coming weeks that the governor will place public education upon a special session so we can look at significant funding improvements for what we're doing, Miri said. We've been asked to do a lot with the students that we serve, and we're not given additional dollars to do that. So no additional dollars for our students. No additional dollars for the teachers who serve those students, supplies, resources, etc. So once again, we applaud our legislators and certainly come to the defense of public education, but there is much more work to do, Miri added. We implore our governor to add public education, specifically the funding of public education, to an upcoming legislative session during the summer months so that we can make wise choices as we invest in the 5.5 million students across the state of Texas, and more specifically, the 33,500 students that we serve here in ECISD. Asked about recently located Nimitz Middle School teacher Brittany Sawyer still being listed on staff, Mira said he couldn't comment on her employment status. "We're incredibly thankful that she's been found and is safe, and hopefully she will continue to maintain a healthy life, but I cannot comment on her employment status right now." He said, "On a separate subject, summer learning starts June 5th. We anticipate about 6,000 students to participate," Mary said. "More information is available on the ECISD website. For summer feeding, there are 21 schools that will be providing summer feeding opportunities, and all of that is listed on the website," he said. School registration begins July 17th. Mary said information that is also on the website. "We are transitioning to a new system that's been actually happening for about a year. That system will go live this summer," he said. "The process is much easier for parents. We are very thankful for this particular new software application. A parent can use their cell phone right now, and it's pretty easy to process. But again, it doesn't open until the 17th of July. As for some students not being allowed to walk the stage at graduation, Mary said ECISD had test scores, but the state had not confirmed whether students passed or failed tests because the state is in the process of creating a new state assessment. This year, our students in elementary, middle, and high school took an assessment. At the high school level specifically, in order for a student to walk the stage, they had to successfully complete all the graduation requirements. If a senior had not passed all of their end-of-course exams, then that prevented them from walking the stage or really any of the other graduation requirements. You have to successfully complete all of those before you earn a high school diploma, Mary said. The state accountability results will be released on September 28th. Again, there's a new state assessment that the students took this year and a new accountability system. Really, a revision of both of those. It will be September 28th before all of that information is released, Mary said. They don't know if it's going to be better or worse, just that it will be different. The math is different. The calculations that are used to create school grades have all changed, so the one thing that you won't be able to do is compare last year to this year because last year's results were calculated using a different metric. This year, it's a whole new system. You won't be able to compare the two, Mary said. As we get more information in the summer and early fall, we could be able to get close to what we think, but until the state releases it, we are very hesitant to claim something until we see it official. And it won't be official until the 28th of September. That's the state's projection right now, he said. Mary said major shifts like this happen about every 5 years. That's what our students experienced this year, a very different STAR test and a different end-of-course exam, and the accountability system is going to be different for students and staff members and schools and districts. We are waiting right now, and we will receive bits and pieces. We'll certainly analyze it all summer and into the early fall, as will many people across the state, trying to figure out exactly where we'll be, Mary said. He added that summer graduation will be held at the end of July or early August. Any student that does earn all the graduation requirements will be able to walk during the summer graduation program.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.